Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara.
We are joined by two stunning women who are going to share their stories with you. And we're doing something a little bit different this time around because we will be joining...
What happened?
No.
Keep going.
I thought somebody was saying like...
Have you taken your medication today?
That is none of your goddamn business and all. Thank you for staying out of my personal affairs. So we are going to be discussing a little bit about true crime, as one does, with Christine and Anna. And ladies, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
So every week with our podcast, we start with an icebreaker just to kind of loosen everybody up. But we probably don't need this for this conversation, but we have to stick with what we do. And it's also one of my favorite parts of the podcast. So tell us, what is the last thing that you have been binging? That could be a book, a show, whatever that looks like for you.
Oh, I just finally binged the last season of Better Call Saul. I waited like a year because I didn't want it to be over. But last week I was like, gotta bite the bullet, as do so many characters. And... finished it, say goodbye, move on.
Your fictional funeral can be laid to rest.
Yes, laid to rest. These characters, this life, they're really working hard to make them look 20 years younger than they are. Because it's the prequel to Breaking Bad and they lost like 3 years during COVID. So they're now like 60 playing themselves in like 2003. They're working hard and I support them. I'm willing to suspend my disbelief.
I didn't realize that. That makes sense.
Yeah, same.
All right. Christine, what about you?
You guys, my friends locally have been really encouraging me to watch Jury Duty. Yes! And this past weekend, I binged it so hard.
Yes!
I could not stop. It was so, so good. And I'm so glad that I finally embraced it. And I'm sad that it's over.
Right? And I don't know how you replicate that. Like, can't do it again.
Hopefully they can, because I want somebody else to go on that journey. I listened to your last podcast episode, and another show that we do watch as a family is It Cake, because the kids like it and we like it. And then I learned about a new show that I need to watch called Nailed It.
You've never seen Nailed It?
No, I haven't seen Nailed It.
What? But... how have you not seen it? You know how when you watch the Olympics, and it makes you feel really bad about yourself because you're like, this 17-year-old just did 14 triple Lutzes and is the strongest person in the world, yada, yada. And you're sitting there going, I did nothing today. I don't even want to go up the stairs. And Nailed It is the opposite. Nailed It makes you feel like I could 100% make a cake, but I wouldn't forget the eggs. You know what I mean? Like, I am confident I would measure the sugar. Like, it's the opposite of watching the Olympics, but with heart, like with a good spirit.
Yeah. Yes.
The best episodes are inevitably when they have to make people or faces. And they,
oh, yeah.
What is that? They're the best.
But, you know, they always say something positive.
Yeah.
I love that. Even though everything is like a complete disaster, they always find something positive to say about it, which I think is what gives it heart.
Yeah.
This is dripping off of the plate, but you know what? You did a really good job keeping the arsenic out of this recipe. Awesome. High five for you.
The flavor's pretty close to the way it should taste.
Right.
So good job.
This will haunt my dreams, but it is standing vertically.
I'm going to start giving compliments in real life.
It reminds me a little bit of the guy that's on TikTok that's like ways to subtly insult men. Have you guys, I know Kim's seen the videos.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you're a lot taller than you sound.
Oh, you sounded so tall on the phone.
It's a guy, his name's Kyle Prue.
Yeah.
And he just reads these in like total deadpan and they're always funny.
Oh,
for some reason, my brain made that connection.
Did you guys see the Barbie movie?
Did we see the Barbie movie?
Kim did.
Oh.
I plan to.
I will never be the same. That movie's going to win Oscars.
It better.
It was the best thing I've ever seen. Was everybody in pink, Kim, when you went?
Oh, yeah. Well, we went to a Barbie blowout premiere party that was local. And I was worried taking my kids that, oh, yeah, guys, we're going to dress up and wear pink and it'll be fun. We might be the only ones dressed up. Just kidding. Everyone is just as nuts as your mother. And everybody was like full on dressed. There was clapping and cheering and...
Oh, yeah. Singing along. There's just a lot of singing along.
This is what I miss about going to the movies. And it was so delightful. So there were a few times that I definitely cried. I went with one of my best friends and my mom, and we took our kids, and it was like, oh, this isn't for the children. It's for me again. But when Spice World, Spice Up Your Life started playing, you guys, I, like, in full mom disclosure, almost wet myself crying, snorting, laughing so hard.
I agree. I laughed so hard I lost my voice. Mm-hmm. And it was just so bold and brilliant and just went there. I walked out of there like, how did Mattel approve this movie?
I don't
know. Who let this slip by, but give them a raise. But yeah, I was fully in pink. My two friends were fully in pink. And before the show, we had dinner and we were out on a patio that was across from the theater. And it was like a parade.
Yeah.
It was just like a parade watching everyone walk by. Dudes dressed like Ken, all beached up. Anyway, it was just, it was exactly why we go to the movies. It felt like old times. Anyway, if you want to see some real negs on dudes, go see the Barbie.
It was phenomenal, though. Loved, loved, loved.
You know what Barbie isn't? True crime. Hey.
That's true. I mean, talk about true escapism, right?
Like, yeah. Unless you're talking about the crime of patriarchy.
Also, we're going there today. Buckle up, buttercups. Come on, Barbies. Let's have a party. I think at this point and specific juncture, it would be great if you both introduced yourselves to everyone so they get to know a little bit more about you that they can clearly tell you're just as unhinged as we are already. So that's... Anna, do you want to start a little bit? Tell us about yourself and what brings you here.
Sure. My name's Anna Van Valen. I live in lovely Los Angeles, California. And for the last 5 years or so, I focused on podcasts. I'm a storyteller and a fan by trade. My background is in the arts, dramatic arts, writing, directing, and acting. About 5 years ago, I shifted to podcasts. And I've worked on everything from food to working with Olympians to working on a true crime podcast with our other guest, Christine. Yeah, I'm here because I had an idea for a panel to do a podcast movement, which is pretty much the biggest podcast conference in the world. It happens once a year. There's a smaller one called Podcast Movement Evolutions, but the big one is in Denver next month. And I was just thinking about what I could talk about. One, honestly, wanting to see Christine because she moved across the country like a loser. And so I haven't gotten to see her since she moved. So I was like, what could Christine and I talk about and meet up in Denver? And something we've come to care about a lot is... is not a joke, Christine. Something we've come to care about a lot through our experience working on a show together and just generally in this industry is true crime. I will say, start off, I'm a huge true crime fan. I'm not here to shame anybody. I'm not here to tell anybody not to make anything, not to read or listen or watch anything. We're just here to talk about the things that you probably haven't thought about behind true crime and how to consume and create responsibly. So that's what I'm doing here.
Raise the roof, Anna.
Sounds a lot like us living on different sides of the country, which is stupid. All right, Christine, tell us about yourself.
It is stupid to be so far away from each other. It's so funny. Anna and I finally met in person the day I was leaving. And it was just like so great.
Really? Was that it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the only time we actually like met in person.
Oh, well, duh, because we started working together at the beginning of COVID. That was why.
Yeah. And then I was peacing out of LA, moving to my hometown, which is a small town in upstate New York. Anna and I came together. We're part of the same Slack group, like podcasting community of podcast producers called LA Women in Audio. And at the beginning of the pandemic, we joined it and just kind of were a support system for other people who were in podcasting. And we didn't know what we were going to do when it came to producing through the pandemic. And we all just kind of threw stories and ideas at each other. And she had heard me talking about this story that I wanted to turn into a podcast. And she had all of these wonderful ideas and she was so supportive. And I knew that if I wanted to create this story, that ethically as a journalist, I needed to bring an outsider into it to direct it, to share their perspective so that I was being as objective and ethical as possible as I was moving forward with sharing this story. And it's a true crime story that I got too close to as a journalist that involves the human trafficking of children. And I just got way too close to the story and it ended up kind of taking over my life for 7 years. I've been very much a part of the story, whether I wanted to be or not. And I wanted to find a way to share it, to build awareness around how common child human trafficking is. But I didn't know how exactly to do it as responsibly as I possibly could and as objectively as I possibly could. And I absolutely did not want to be part of the story. But everybody I was telling about this was like, no, 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 your story is part of it. It has to be in there. And I was like, no, 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 I don't want the story to be about me. And Anna was like, Christine, let's do this. It's going to be about you. And she virtually held my hand and helped me explain it to her and go through all of these interviews that I had with survivors and unfortunately people who have passed on since. And there's bad guys, there's good guys, and there's me. And that's how we came together. We're still producing it.
Yeah, we're still working on it. It's in great shape. I will correct one thing Christine said. We didn't make it about her.
No.
And this is something that is really important. I'm very much coming at this conversation from the content side in terms of content development and storytelling. It wasn't that we wanted to make it about Christine. It was that her story, her narrative was a great backbone to have a through line for the whole story. And using her experience, using her as sort of our surrogate as the way into this was a great way to then do offshoots of all the different, I'm saying characters and I don't mean that in terms of like dehumanizing anybody. I just mean the actors in the story. Using her narrative as the backbone of the story and then going in and out to tell everyone else's stories. So it organized all of these different elements in a great way that I felt like would make it accessible and interesting and compelling without falling into these content pitfalls of true crime that we can talk about a little bit. So we didn't make it about Christine, but we used her experience as our way in, as the narrative through line so that we could tell this bigger story.
That's such an interesting perspective to kind of be on the outside, trying to tell the story from the outside, but you're also kind of have made yourself part of the story because of how you were telling it. So it gives you a different perspective on really what we want to talk about and what we're planning to talk about even more at Podcast Movement, which we'll talk a little bit more about Podcast Movement a little bit later. And that's really shaping this conversation of ethics and true crime, which everyone who has listened to our podcast, all of our listeners know that Kim's experiences and my experiences in ethicality and how people do or do not practice it in the true crime sphere and adjacent spheres is what shaped us wanting to enter this podcast. And so I would like to hear a little bit from both of you as far as like your comfort level of how did you first become, I guess, aware that ethics and true crime was something that we needed to be talking about more? I feel like everyone has kind of this moment where they're like, oh, ethics and true crime matters, especially if you're coming at it from a journalistic background, from a production side background. There's this moment for most people that are in this arena where they're like, oh, this is why it's important. So what did that look like for both of you?
I'll go first, Anna, if you're...
Yeah, go for it.
I feel so like fueled just by this topic in general. So my background is as a TV news reporter, and ethical true crime and telling ethical true crime stories became so very important to me. It's why we are on this show right now. It's why we all came together to be speaking at Podcast Movement. And it's because I was so frustrated with my career. And I want to say this as best I can. I love being a journalist. I love being there on the scenes of what's going on and sharing that and doing a public service and being on the sidelines of history. I felt so privileged to be in that situation, to be sharing those stories and being there advocating for the knowledge of my community so we could share information and be informed when it comes to decisions. However, I also was a multimedia journalist, which means I did all the video recording, all the editing, and all the writing, the producing, and then the being on camera for most of my career until I was in Los Angeles, where it was against the union rules to be doing the videography as well as the editing. But this also means I was usually the first on the scene when something awful happened and would have to either witness in part what was happening as somebody else was first discovering it or pick up the pieces right after something happened. So for 10 years of my life, my day on the job was someone else's worst day of their life. And it can be such a privilege to be there for somebody in that time and almost give them a place to speak to a higher power. I know that might sound weird, but I have found that for some people, when they have a microphone and a camera in front of their face, they feel like they can address the great beyond. And it's almost healing for them to talk to someone in those moments. And I don't know if I should use the word healing, processing. They're processing, but they're still very much in the moment. And the more I would do this, the more it felt gross. The more it felt exploitive, the more it felt like, oh, wait, we can't follow up on that very important story that I just did. This woman just poured her heart out to me. And I felt like I made this deep connection with someone. And now I just have to forget about her and move on. And then the next day, do it again with somebody new. And it just started to feel like my legacy was heartbreak. And that made me feel really bad. And then I learned how much money TV stations make versus how much the reporters make versus how much the survivors or family members of loved ones make. And it just started to feel very wrong as I discovered more and more about the industry. And it started to make me angry, like so angry that my head might blow off of my body. Because especially in this human trafficking piece specifically, these girls, these children have already been exploited so much in ways that they'll never be the same. And it sucks on so many levels. And for someone to come along and convince them to sell away their life rights so that they can produce a story, but never send any money back to that family, it just makes me sick to my stomach. How could you possibly do that? Oh, because this is what we need to do. Like, this is what the industry says. We need to do this so we can create marketing materials and advertising and otherwise exploit more their story in ways that maybe this person doesn't want that exploited. Just so a lot of other people can make a lot more money? And does that go towards helping the survivor actually heal ever or process their trauma or move on? Is there money that is given back to these survivors or the families? I don't think so in most cases. And so for me, as somebody who's seen it and then was producing a show, am still producing a show, it's difficult for us to get it made because we have a set of standards that we won't cross over the line to get it produced because we care about making sure the money goes back to the people who survived it or the family of the, not all of the money, but at least a portion, right? If there's money that comes in, it's a portion of it goes back to the people who have shared their story. And so that's how it's written in my contracts for my business that I currently own. And I think that I have one of the few production companies that doesn't make people sign away the rights to their IP.
Yeah, no, it's not just something that you're passionate about. It's still pretty fresh to you because just as much as you do want to keep this journalistic side and everything separate from you, we're human beings and we crave connection. And when you are there in the worst moments of your life, you're bound to be bonded to these people that you are asking some horrific questions of because they are in turn giving you back that same energy. And then to just cut it and have to send it off for somebody to package, stamp on and hope that, well, the viewers will want to see this one line taken out of context. it can be really dehumanizing. You're seeing that from almost a middleman perspective in the media, whereas Kara and I experience that each time that we do an interview, whether it's for a news outlet or for someone else that maybe they didn't even get our permission, but they'll take these sound clips because that's clickbait. That'll get the headlines. That'll be something that I know other people are going to want to tune in as a cautionary tale. And so there is this feeling now that more people are seeking out true crime that you also have, as Kara says, conscious consumerism, where we want to know where these things are coming from. We want to know what goes into it, how it's being created. Is it ethical? And at the heart of all of these stories are survivors and their families. So when you were putting together this panel, what was it that you had in mind that you wanted to convey to the audience at Podcast Movement?
Personally, I really admire the work that you guys have all done on your own. You're all women that I look up to. I follow y'all on social media. And I admire the messages that you're putting out into the world. And I think that the more people get to know the full story, the more that can change hearts and minds. What do they know, like trust? Like when people know you, like you, and trust you, this is marketing speak, guys. But it's true. Like when people really get to know you, they tend to like you or not. That's also happened to me. And then there's more chance that we'll trust you. And hopefully, I was thinking as a collective, we could work together to share sides of the industry that maybe haven't been completely forthright or forthcoming in the past. Because I have found that a lot of journalists like me who are on the ground, in the field, witnessing awful things happen, or interviewing someone right after it's happened, they come to that situation as a human first, and they really do hope to do good in the world. That's probably what drew them to the industry of journalism. But somehow through our culture, it just has shifted and it becomes less about doing good and more about the bottom line of some invisible person or company's pockets. And that is so very frustrating. So if we can talk to podcasters who are creating this kind of content and they're working independently to put stories out there, and if they want to work with us to do it, like you two were so approachable. And I think I sent you both messages on Instagram and y'all just were like, yeah, hey, let's make it happen. And then we were like all of a sudden on a Zoom call and we were making stuff happen. I didn't feel worried or like, I guess you were easily accessible, I would say. And I just thought we could all come together and share.
We aren't hard to find.
I slid into y'all's DMs and you did not ignore me.
No, it's both of us that are managing our social medias at this point. Yeah, you get us, right? Like we're accessible. That's one thing that we both value ourselves on. So
we do our own stunts for better or worse.
Yeah.
We are so thankful for all of your support. We're also supported by Cured. They are a supplement company that is changing the industry standard for how supplements are made. They are products that I use every day that have genuinely changed my life.
Kara, of course, is the one who introduced me to them, and I was a little hesitant at first, but I can say after using their products for the last couple of months, I'm hooked.
My favorites that I think everyone should try and will love are the Serenity, Zen, and Rise. Serenity gummies have ashwagandha, L-theanine, and CBD. They're going to help you to just relax, take the edge off at the end of a long day or whenever you need it. Zen is going to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep soundly. Hallelujah. And Rise is going to give you sustained energy and focus without caffeine or without a crash.
I was really hesitant to try anything I view as a sleep aid, but I can say after incorporating Zen into my nighttime routine, I am getting such better sleep.
Yes. And for all of our listeners, you can use code KARA10, go to curednutrition.com or go to the link in our show notes to take you straight to the website. We hope that you love it as much as we do.
Anna, what about you? What did your journey to realizing that there was a concern for ethics and true crime, what did that look like for you?
That really came into focus for me when I was making it. I had been a consumer of it for a very long time. And then when Christine came to me, I thought she had such an incredible story and an important story and that she was a great, great person to tell it. She had so much material and she was so close to it that she couldn't see where the narrative was. Like she couldn't break it into, because it has to be a format, right? To be in a podcast and how it would be most impactful and most compelling and most helpful. So the first thing I did was go through all the material that she had, and the material she had was voluminous. She's an incredible journalist. She had interviewed everyone and gotten all these incredible interviews, not just with victims, but with family members, with witnesses, with law enforcement, all kinds of stuff. And then all of these text conversations, email conversations. And I went through it and it was overwhelming how dark, how painful, just unimaginable this stuff was going on. And by the way, this bust of this pimp that is his ring is the focus of this story. He was busted a mile from Disneyland in a hotel that all of us have stayed in, a hotel chain that all of us have stayed in, a mile from Disneyland. If you think that this is people getting chained up and thrown in the back of vans in dark alleys, you are wrong. This is happening everywhere. See, I'm getting riled up. But what happened was I had all this material and it was so much. And I remember telling her like, yeah, I'll get through it in a week. And then I had to call her back and say, I'm not going to get through this in a week because I can't just watch this all day. Like I can't watch 4 hours of victim statements. I just can't do it. And then I had choices to make, right? That was why I was brought in, was to make choices of what we were going to use and how we were going to tell the story. And so that was when it really came to me. And what I want to convey to people is that there are choices. Are you going to sensationalize this? Are you going to stick to the facts? Are you going to like throw all the grisly horror at them? Or are you going to, what are you going to focus on? And how are you going to tell this story? And I was in that position, you know, and I had been joking, like all those years of watching true crime has finally paid off professionally. And it was in the sense of like, what had I seen that made me feel gross? What had I seen that made me walk away thinking about the victim and not the perpetrator? So that's really where it came into play for me. And individually picking the information, the events, things like that, so that we had a balance of not sensationalizing, not glamorizing anything, of telling the truth and of not sanitizing it. Because we don't want to play it down. We don't want to act like this isn't as bad as it is. And so that balance of not sensationalizing, but not sanitizing is really hard to get. And I think that's the line that I, as the creator, wanted to walk. There's basics to storytelling. There's a beginning, middle, and end, although this story doesn't have an end. It keeps going. But getting the listener invested in the characters, invested in the world, invested in the story, invested in the outcome, right? Those are basics of storytelling. And then how you maneuver that is up to you. And so that was sort of the first time I realized that people making true crime have choices. Everything they include, every line, every word, every soundbite is a choice. And how you do it is a choice. Are you going to use somebody's 911 call? Are you going to pick if their journal was in evidence? Does that mean that you should use their journal entries? That's a choice. If there's crime scene photos and those are public record now, are you going to use that? Are you going to use those details? That's a choice. We're responsible for that. And I could talk about that all day. But that was really where I'm coming from as a storyteller, is storytelling responsibly. And that could mean different things for every different situation, every different scenario, and how much input you get and how much, you know, all of that. But really, my bottom line is you have choices and don't be lazy.
I've been biting my tongue because I'm so glad you talked about walking this line of telling the story without sanitizing it, but without sensationalizing it, because this was a constant conversation for my production company on the movie and on the documentary, because there are certain details of my story that I don't feel like need to be told. They just don't.
Right.
To get the point across. But I'm thinking specifically of one scene that they went back and forth on the movie. So my producer, he was saying, you know, I want people to be a little uncomfortable when they watch it. He said, so walking that line between what's going to make the network happy and me wanting people to be slightly uncomfortable watching this scene is very difficult. And he was in constant communication with me. This is what I'm thinking. How do you feel about that? And ultimately, I gave them just all the trust. And I said, listen, you're the one who's in these conversations. I trust you to do this in a way that I would be proud of. And I'll see it anyway. And I'll tell you if I hate it. But it is possible. It's very difficult. We had multiple situations through the documentary and through the movie where we had ethical considerations of, well, we can't do this. So what does it look like to respect people's rights? And I think that's an important part of the conversation that needs to be had, is that it is possible. And we have the two of you with your vast experience and focusing on ethics who can say, I know it sounds difficult when we give you these guidelines. And if you haven't heard these guidelines that Kim and I give, the basis of it, it's consent. To be ethical, do you have the consent? Are you giving back
to the victim or the victim's family in some way, shape, or form. If you want to boil it down to the basics, those are the basics. And we could go on and elaborate on more within those categories. But a lot of people hear that and they're like, oh, we have to get consent about everything, every step of the way. Well, what if you get consent from the mom and not the dad? What if the people who would give the consent have passed away? There's a lot of what ifs and what does it look like? And at the end of the day, you have to say, what am I comfortable with? And what do I think the family would be comfortable with? And it's hard. It's so hard when you're trying to tell a story.
It may be hard to try to tell these stories for content creators who are listening. They may think, oh, that's really hard to try and get all of the consent and all of these different pieces and to, you know, have the victims or their families look through the last thing. Like, oh, that's really hard. It's really hard surviving it. It's really hard that we don't get to separate ourselves from this story. It's really hard that we have to deal with this every single day of our lives. That's really hard. If you are in this to make money or to spread a message or to whatever it is, whatever is motivating you to create this content, it's going to be hard. And if it's not hard, you're probably not doing it right.
This is our soapbox. This is the crux of why we created this podcast for sure. But I mean, I just keep coming back to, if it's too difficult for you to take people's feelings who have been highly victimized, if that's too difficult for you to take that into account, then you need to be doing something else.
Yeah. Well, and the basic question of ethics, right? Like what's the first question of ethics is who will be harmed?
Right.
What will be harmed? Who will be harmed? Will someone or something be harmed? And so that's the first question. And the last question that you need to ask yourself, because I do think many of these stories, there is something very important in telling them if you're doing it right, if you're doing it with consent. And look, we are always, since the beginning of time, we have wanted to look at the dark side of everything. We have wanted to look inside dark minds, dark sides of society. We've wanted to look at people who are apparent, people who diverge from the norm. I mean, like if you look at nursery rhymes, and fairy tales. And I mean, Shakespeare, Macbeth could be called making a murderer. The dude starts out a bureaucrat and ends up a serial killer, right? This is always going to be part of it, but that's not an excuse to do it in a way that might hurt people. So for me, you know, another way to say ethics for me, if that feels like too heady for people, is dignity. So if someone has had an experience where they were the victim of a crime, especially a violent crime, especially a sexual crime, they have had an experience that took their dignity from them and probably also the justice system, the court system, the attention they got, the fallout from it, or how they were treated by the cops, by the hospital, like everything else. They've had experience where their dignity was taken from them. And on top of that experience, a lot of times their dignity taken from misogyny, from having no choice but to engage in prostitution or being a lower class woman who couldn't live in a safe neighborhood. There are ways that dignity has been lost. So is by telling a story that includes them, because you're not actually telling their story, you're telling a story that includes them. Are you going to be a way to give them some dignity back? Or are you going to be something else that takes their dignity away? And I am making an assumption here because I don't consider myself a survivor, certainly not on the level that you two are. But that's kind of how I wrap my mind around what it means to tell these stories ethically.
Every state has some form of a victim rights amendment within their constitution. And here in Colorado, it is that victims should be treated with fairness, dignity, and respect. And that should not just be part of the criminal justice system. Now, we know that is not always the case. That's not always how you treat victims. We see that every day in the news and that play out with friends or family or whomever. But fairness, dignity, and respect needs to be in the forefront of your mind when you're talking about any of these people. And it isn't just true crime. Is fairness, dignity, and respect in the forefront of your mind when you're relating to other humans, even at the grocery store, when somebody's waiting on you, if you're out to eat, somebody that you happen to be passed by and then you get to pass them on the interstate and then they didn't use their blinker and if you start from a place of fairness, dignity, and respect, it's really hard to hate people that you see up close. Brene Brown always says, move in. So I would encourage more people who are in this world, who are doing this kind of content creation, production, whatever it may be, to move in. Don't be scared to put yourselves in our shoes. And if you have questions, we're here to ask as well. We may take turns. We may not answer them the way that you want to, but that's part of learning, right? It can be scary. It can be vulnerable. But that's, I think, what all of us are coming together as we get ready to present this panel at Podcast Movement is what we're hoping for, is that we get to give a little bit of education, maybe a little bit of levity, and impact as many people as we can moving forward to better the world for survivors moving forward as well.
Yeah. And empowerment. There may be a lot of people who want to create things, who are excited about something. They don't want to do it wrong. They don't know how to approach it. And they really do care about doing it ethically. And so hopefully we can give a few tools of approach and resources where they can check and inform them and do the work, you know, that they want to do in a really responsible way.
I wanted to share, just coming at this from, and I'm going to say this gently, and I want to give myself some grace, but as somebody who has felt like that they have done some things wrong, as a journalist, there are some decisions that I made as a journalist that may not have been the best at times. And I tend to beat myself up about those things. Still today, I'm working on it, I know. But I'm just saying, I feel like sharing this is important because it's the reason I'm here now. I recognize that there are some things that happened that were just so effed up that I needed to step in here and make a difference and just shift the way of thinking, because there are people out there who don't think it's effed up. This is their livelihood. This is their career. This is what they do. They turn these stories into shows or they turn them into podcasts, and they don't necessarily see what's wrong there. And as someone who used to be paid to cover true crime, I at some point felt like I was doing some things wrong. I can share examples. This is not even about the human trafficking story, but there was a time I accidentally did a death notification for a father about his son, and I had no idea I was doing it. A portion of the story is Sky Fox was live overhead of a deadly crash, and there were four people inside that had passed away. We knew that they were teenagers. And so my assignment desk got the license plate number of that car from Sky Fox, reached out to their contact from the DMV, found the name associated with that license plate, went to LexisNexis, which is like an advanced white pages, yellow pages search system, and handed me a list of names with phone numbers and addresses and told me to start making calls. The first call I made, I'm like breathing heavy, scared as F that they're not going to answer. Who knows what's going to happen? I take a deep breath. I make the phone call. And the guy answers. And I just am like, oh, thank God you answered. And he's like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, I'm just following up on a deadly car crash. And he was like, well, my son's not home. He borrowed my car. What the heck just happened? What did I just do? That was not my place. But this is a problem when the news moves faster than the investigations can be carried out. I effed that up. I effed it up. And I then had to still go to that person's house, that family's house, that father and mother and siblings, I still had to go there and ask them to talk to me on camera about what happened. They didn't. And they didn't politely decline. They were furious, as they should be. I mean, I have 10 years of stories, and that's just one of them. So
I'm at a loss for words. That's,
yeah, it's awful.
That's horrible.
And yeah, it's not something I meant to do, but that doesn't matter.
You weren't doing that voluntarily. That was what your job was making you do. Like, this is the problem, is that's what your job was making you do. It wasn't just an individual failing. There are entire industries.
But that's how you get ahead in the industry, is when you...
Yeah, but your job was making you do that so it could make money.
Exactly. And so like, but it's so effed up.
And that's how the studio makes more money, because they get the scoop.
Yes.
It's a whole system.
But I was the one on the call. I'm the one who did it. I'm the one.
I get it.
So I feel like I also have to be accountable for that. And that's one of many reasons why I think that I'm looking at this from a whole new perspective, because things like that happened too many times to me or to other journalists in the field who, I mean, I've covered a lot of awful stuff. I'm sorry, guys.
No, don't be sorry. I mean, I think it's so important that you're sharing that part of your journey and your story, though, because just like we say, to everyone who shares their story on this podcast, you're not alone in that. There are other people who have messed up and said the wrong thing to their friend who has gone through something awful, right? There are people probably who are listening who have worked in media, who have succumbed to the pressure from their network, or who have done something, even, I mean, people who have would understand this because their bosses told them to do something that they were not comfortable with. This is not a unique human situation. And I think what's most important is that we always continue to learn and grow and admit, hey, I really messed up. Yes, I didn't mean to. I didn't know what I was doing, but you're still taking responsibility and you're learning. And now you're not just learning, you're trying to change other people's perspectives and you're trying to keep this from happening to other people. So, I mean, I just pat you on the back for taking, you're doing exactly what Kim and I tell people to do. Like you're taking a really crappy situation and you're doing something positive with it. You are turning it around. And that's the more important thing. Like when we tell these stories and we interview people, we don't want to just talk about the crappy thing that happened in their life. We want to talk about what are you doing with it now? Because that's more interesting. What's more interesting than something bad that you did or something bad that happened is what you're doing with it now. And so I think that's what we're trying to accomplish with this panel and with this podcast movement conversation and our appearance there is helping people to understand, like, you could have messed up already, but that doesn't mean you have to quit. That doesn't mean that you can't apologize. And there are people that Kim and I have interacted with who we have the utmost respect for who have messed up on stuff and they have come out and they have said it. And they still are people that I would consider upstanding in the ethical true crime genre. And so I think that's an important part of our messaging. Like, here's what ethics is in true crime. It's hard. You're probably going to mess up, but it's possible. And so I look forward to having more of these conversations so that you don't feel so alone, Christine, because more people will say, hey, I also have messed up a lot. And I think that we have the potential to really make a big difference in this community with these types of conversations.
I think you also have the ability to reach people who maybe didn't even realize that they'd messed up or that they maybe violated someone's consent or feelings. You being able to take what you have been through and done and use it as an educational resource is going to be hugely helpful. It does not matter what brought you here. You can't do better until you know better. And that's exactly what we're all trying to do. So I commend you both for your vulnerability, for taking a stand to, you know, help lead the way in this industry and say, there's change coming. We're going to do more to show that we are respecting the true dignity of the subjects of our stories. And this is a great place to start. Now, one of the things that we always have folks do that are part of this podcast is offer resources and leave our listeners with a call to action. That's something we would love to see the true crime community do across the board. We don't just want you consuming these stories. We want you activated and doing something to make the world a better place. So for today's, given that we are going to be at Podcast Movement, what would your call to action be?
Well, if you're going to Podcast Movement, you should probably come see our panel. It's Tuesday, August 22nd at 2:30. So if you're coming to the conference, please come to the panel. We'll be talking more and we'd love to take questions. We'd love to chat with you afterwards and make this an interactive thing and share more with you about this subject. If you've got a virtual ticket, you can tune in as well. Yeah, you just go to podcastmovement.com/events and you can see the live tickets, the virtual tickets, and then you'll get to see both our panel and everything else that's going on there. And you can find me, I'm at annavanvalen.com. And also I'll be making I've already made it. So that you have a practical tool and a resource, be making a quick guide for you, a free downloadable PDF quick guide to ethical true crime. So you can get that at annavanvalen.com/truecrime. Christine?
I would say a call to action would be review this episode of Survivor's Guide to True Crime on Apple Podcasts. Share us your thoughts about this episode by leaving a review. I think getting feedback from you, the listener, about how this episode has enlightened you, maybe made you think twice about the content you're creating, or maybe it's helped you in some way. And the more you review this show, the more people find it. And the more people who find it, the more people who can learn about it. And that can help us all on our mission to make more ethical true crime content.
Perfect. Well, thank you both so much for being here today. I can't wait to finally meet you in person here in a few weeks. Kara and I will get to be spooning. Very exciting. Annoying the crap out of my husband while she's here.
Yay! It's my primary goal. My primary goal is how much can we annoy Mike?
Watch out, Jennifer. Thank you so much for having us. This has been really great. Even more excited for the panel.
Thank you for having us, guys. See you soon.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain.
If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show.
To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Have you taken your medication today?
That is none of your goddamn business and all. Thank you for staying out of my personal affairs.